Well, today we're continuing on in our series, The Trees. And I have loved this series, and I think I've mentioned this pretty much every time that I've spoken, that like it's doubled in size since we started it, because I feel like this concept, if you can lock onto the concept of the trees, then everything else in your life kind of makes sense, and you start seeing things in the different categories of the choices that you make, because the choices that we make, big and small, they determine the person that we become and the kind of life that we will have. Just like Adam and Eve, they had a choice to make. They had to choose between, are we going to eat from the tree of life, or are we going to eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, or as I like to call it, the DIY tree, because we're making our choices ourselves when we do. We'll get to that. So if you've missed any of the messages so far, I would highly encourage you guys, go on our website and listen to them. Because some of them might be kind of obvious to you, but some of them might be kind of challenging. It might make you think about things just a little bit differently. But today I just kind of want to highlight the difference between the trees, just so we can all be on the same page. So the tree of life represents God's own life and creative power that's made available to others. It's a connection between God and humanity. And God invites Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden to eat from the tree of life. He's saying, this is my way of imparting my life, my wisdom to you. Eat from it. Eat from my wisdom. Eat from my life. And in turn, God mandated humanity, he mandated them to pass on this life to the rest of creation, to do something with it. So the tree was a reminder of humanity's dependence on God and their responsibility to steward the life that they received. It was their responsibility to do this. And then we also have the other tree, the other option, the tree of knowledge, good or evil, or the DIY tree. See, it was also in the center of the garden, and it also was beautiful and attractive, and it produced fruit that was good to eat. But God warned them, do not eat from this tree. Because this tree, it represents taking the authority of deciding what is good and what is bad into our hands. We are taking it on ourselves to determine what is wise, what is unwise, how to live. See, eating from it, it's the same as cutting God from the equation, from cutting God out of the process of our growth and our sustenance. So that's why I call it the DIY tree, because they're choosing to try to do life by yourself without God. But see, we're not looking at two literal trees, right? But we still have the same choice to make today. So are we going to choose to yield to God's definition of what is good and bad? Or are we going to choose to try to make it through life on our own without God's help? Yep. That's my child. It's hardly a one-time choice, though. See, it's reflected, this choice is reflected in the situations that we face in life. It's deciding where our source is going to be for wisdom, for life, for knowledge, for hope. Why would we try to manage it on our own if we have another option? See, where we place our trust, whether in God or in ourselves, becomes our subconscious motivation for the actions that we take in life. And this series has all been about considering some of these options. So each week we've been talking about different motivations or mindsets or different rationalities that we have that we may not even realize, but they're revealed in the fruit of our lives. So I want to start by saying I am 100% unqualified to speak this message today. In fact, when I told Matt about what the topic was for today, he actually laughed. And he said, who's going to speak that? Because he knows that I am not an expert in this topic, especially in the last few years. See, I've been balancing trying to work, go to grad school, being a mom, a wife, a pastor, keeping up with laundry, shopping, cooking, cleaning, all the social expectations, the sports schedules, and all of that mixed together, relaxing just kind of seems like a far-off dream. Like, it just doesn't seem like something that's actually attainable. But see, I've honestly always been this way. See, as far as I can remember, it has been nearly impossible for me to relax if there's anything that needs to be done, whether it's my responsibility or not. But, and just to make sure that I don't miss anything, I have the habit of making countless to-do lists. If you've been in my office, in my house, my desk is so colorful because of all of the different post-it notes that are stuck everywhere. I should have put a picture of my desk. You guys would be ashamed of me. And I rarely go anywhere without my planner, just in case. Just in case I need to know about something or schedule something. See, we all have things that we're not proud of. But the Bible says to confess your sins to one another. So I have a picture to show you guys today from my wild college days. Are you guys ready for this? Okay. This is me asleep on my planner with a pen in my hand. See, I was at a friend's apartment, and I was trying to escape from campus. I was trying to get away from all of the responsibilities and the stress that were caused by my classes, by my job on campus. So I'm sure I had a project I was working on. And my friend convinced me to come crash at her place for a night so I could get away, so I could relax. But see, she didn't realize that I am a professional at taking my work with me. I push myself so hard for so long that eventually I just crash, and I crash hard. So we had gotten together, and she was like, no, you're not allowed to work at all. You're going to relax. You're going to have a good time. We're going to watch a movie. We're going to order pizza. So she ordered some pizza, and we were about to start the movie, and I was like, oh, well, I just have to run to the bathroom real quick. So I snuck into her room because there was just something that was eating at me that I was just thinking about, and I needed to check something in my planner and figure something out. And I fell asleep before the pizza was even delivered. And see, when I look back at this, I can't help but wish that I had spent less time worrying and trying to control and to plan out every moment of my time. I wish I had spent more time just enjoying the moment that I was in. See, I have no idea now what was so important at this time that kept me from just enjoying some time off with my friend. But at the time, it felt like a priority. And sadly, I still have a lot to learn about this topic. So we're going to learn together today. Because I know I'm not alone. I know that every person in this room has at some point, if not currently, experienced stress and is craving rest. See, we live in a time and a society where constant hustle is valued. It's not just valued, it's encouraged. It feels like it's forced upon. You got to hustle. You got to make it happen. You got to work until it's done. And a full calendar is a badge of honor. If I have one or two things in every little square of my planner, then that's a successful week. I'm keeping myself busy. That means that I'm important. But see, when we're constantly pushing ourselves beyond what we are really capable of, how can we find peace? How can we prioritize rest in a world filled with constant stress? So let's flip to Genesis chapter 2. It says in verse 2, by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and he made it holy because on it he rested from all of the work of creating that he had done. See, God had created the heavens, the earth, and everything that was in it. And then on the seventh day, he called it good and he rested. And then he called the seventh day good, but he also called it holy. See, the Hebrew word used for rest here is sabbat. And it's the root of the English word Sabbath. And it literally just means that the work has stopped. The work has ceased. It's been completed. And so when the work was completed, God rested. God himself set the pattern for us of work and rest. However, the rest was not meant to continue forever. See, the initial work was done. Creation had been created. It was done. But there was still so much more left to do with it. See, work has become kind of a four-letter word, hasn't it? Like, most of us don't really enjoy work. Like, it's something that you dread. Even if you love what you do. Like, I love what I do, but still this morning I was like, I don't want to get out of bed. There's going to be times when you feel drained, you feel exhausted and frustrated. There's mornings when you just can't seem to talk yourself into getting up and doing it all over again. But see, that was not God's intention or design for work. Yes, God created work. But see, unlike a lot of people think, God did not create work as a punishment after the fall, after Adam and Eve ate from the DIY tree. See, it existed as a way for man to take part in God's creative design. Genesis 2:15 says, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it." See, God alone was able to create something out of nothing. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a part to play in that. See, he invites all of humanity to join with him, to take his creation, this raw creation that he made out of nothing, and use it to continue to create something more. That's how we partner with God in creation. See, we are to continue the work that he began by taking something that he made out of nothing to make something from something. Does that make sense? You tracking? Okay. So, for example, God made a tree. We make a house. God made wheat. We make bread. God made mold. We make medicine. That one's just weird. And cheese, which... See, and God made cows, we make burgers. Like, we take something that God created, and then we use the creative power that he made us to have to make something new out of it, make something different out of it. God provided us with everything that we could possibly need as raw material to continue to create new things during his original creation. We have every resource that we could ever need on this earth, plus so much more that we haven't even begun to discover yet. Doesn't that make you guys just a little excited? I know science people are like, ooh, that's cool. See, this work that God invites us to, it is not stressful labor. It is meant to be fulfilling and enriching. But see, Adam and Eve's choice to eat from the DIY tree, it changed it. Just like everything else, it changed it into something more difficult. See, now, work is, it's a source of stress, exhaustion, and sometimes even pain. Genesis 3:17, it says to Adam, he said, now this is after they ate the fruit. from the DIY tree, and God is telling them, like, now this is the result of your action. To Adam, he said, because you listened to your wife and ate fruit from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. See, by choosing the DIY tree, it meant that they were choosing hard labor over easy cultivation. See, now the food that they would be eating, it's not just going to grow up from the ground where they can come and they can take it and consume it. Now they have to work around and through thorns and obstacles. Now they have to dig into the dirt to plant before they can even consider cultivating. See, in Genesis 1:28, God gave the mandate for humans to create and cultivate along with him. This was the work that God issued before the fall. And we still have that same mandate today. But now, it's more difficult. Now, it requires hard labor to accomplish it. And it is physically necessary to take a break and to rest from this kind of work. The post-fall work is hard. It ain't fun. It's exhausting. But see, ceasing to work for just a while, it doesn't really bring rest, does it? See, the weekend is never quite long enough. The vacation, it doesn't last as long as it should. And sometimes when you come home, it doesn't feel like you really rested. Has anyone ever taken like a mental health day? Yeah. See, sometimes I'm like, I just need a mental health day. Like, I just need a day to just like zone out and not think about anything, just to reset and so I can be ready to go back and tackle the job. I just need a refreshing. And it sounds like a solid idea. But see, what I've found personally is at the end of the day, I often feel more tired and depleted, even though I had been physically resting. It's because what we need to feel rested, it's not just to cease working for a time, like what's represented in the word Sabbath. See, there's another Hebrew word, nuach, and it's also used to refer to God's Sabbath rest. See, both Sabbath and nuach are translated to the English word Sabbath, but they hold different meanings in Hebrews. You know, sometimes when you translate something into a different language, it's hard to find that exact translation. So the intentional way that these are used together gives a compound definition for the word that we know as Sabbath. So Sabbat, it's work that has been completed or stopped. But nuach means to dwell or to settle among. See, when God or people, when they nuach, it always involves settling into a place that is safe, secure, and stable. For example, when King David, after all the battles, after all the war, when King David came to dwell or nuach in his house, it was because God had provided him rest from his enemies. The Sabbath occurs not only when the work ceases, but also when there is security in God's presence. See, Sabbath is meant to be a time of restoration and peace with God, each other, and the rest of creation. See, God's presence, it rested at nuach in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. And it was represented in the form of the tree of life. When they chose the DIY tree, they were choosing to step away from God's restful presence. See, they couldn't have fully realized what they were doing at the time. But what they were doing, they were choosing stress over rest. You know what I miss? I miss going on vacations as a kid. Like, I had no idea how nice it was at the time because, like, I wasn't responsible for deciding where we were going to go, where we would stay, how we were going to get there, what we were going to eat, what we were going to do, or how we were going to pay for any of it. I was just along for the ride. It was fun. Worry-free. But see, vacations as a parent, it's totally different. Totally different. See, all the responsibilities for the trip, it often makes it feel more like work than just staying home. And frankly, vacations with young kids especially, they can be exhausting. But of course, like, there's fun times and, like, it's worth it. But it would be a lot easier to relax if someone else were, like, taking care of all of the arrangements and the responsibilities and just picking up the tab. So I can imagine that life in the Garden of Eden for Adam and Eve before the fall was kind of like being a kid on vacation. See, they didn't have to worry about what to eat or what to do or where to go or anything like that. It was all taken care of for them. See, God had provided everything for them. So their work, it must have felt more like play. You know, like if you watch kids play, think about the things that they play at. They play at jobs. They play at responsibility. They play at being an adult. Like they want to shop. They want to work at a restaurant. They want to, you know, be a mom or a dad. They want to do things that come with responsibilities, but they are doing it in a way where they're finding enjoyment and fulfillment out of it. Because they didn't hold the responsibility of it. See, just like kids want to grow up so they can be in charge, the temptation of independence caused Adam and Eve to overlook the blessing of being taken care of and worry-free. But see, once they realized what life was like under the DIY tree, see, they longed for that feeling of being restfully present with God again. See, to experience true rest, it's not enough to physically stop working. We also need spiritual rest in our souls. And that's only found in God's presence. It's part of how we were created to function. It's not even part of our DNA. It's like more embedded in us than our DNA. It's who we are. See, for nearly 4,000 years after Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, there was no real rest for the weary. There were like little pockets of hope, little pockets of heaven that people could feel, but it was limited, and there were some people that were able to experience it more, like priests and prophets, but most people did not experience what it was like being in God's presence. Because God's presence no longer rested or nuached among all of humanity. But there were promises that his presence would return. See, early in his ministry, Jesus gave an invitation to all who had ears to hear. He said in Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." If you guys don't know, a yoke is like that thing that you put across like oxen when they're pulling a wagon type thing. Jesus isn't saying here that like he's like, "I'm an ox, like come join me and we'll pull this wagon together." Like he's saying that yes, there is work. But my work is easy. The burden of my work is light. See, Jesus isn't telling them that if they just hung out with him, that he'd make sure that they got in a really good nap. Like what he's saying is he's saying that being in his presence will provide rest for their souls that they so desperately need, that they want. See, his presence can restore, it can inspire, it equips them to do God's good work. In Matthew 12, Jesus begins to redefine what Sabbath rest really is. And it doesn't really go over very well with like the legalistic Pharisees. So in Matthew 12, verse 9, where am I here? I'm in the wrong place, sorry. So going on from that place, he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there looking for a reason to bring charges against Jesus. They asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" Like, I can just picture them, like, in their, like, priestly robes and stuff, and they're just like, "Is it lawful?" They're trying to trip him up. They're trying to make him say something that will prove that he's not following the Jewish law. And he said to them, "If any of you has a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." So he stretched it out, and it was completely restored, just as sound as the other. But the Pharisees went out and plotted how they might kill Jesus. Dude, this guy's trying to give you a break. He's like, "Come to me. I'll help you rest. I'll help you relax. I'll show you the way." And the religious, legalistic response is, "Let's find a way to kill him and get rid of him." See, by claiming that it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath, Jesus is telling them that true rest is more than just taking a break from work. It's more than just the Sabbath, than just ceasing to work. See, if the work that you're doing is good, if it's the good work that comes from God, then the work itself can provide rest for your souls. Just like the Pharisees, we tend to miss the point over and over, and we try to define rest in our own terms. Instead of accepting Jesus' invitation to come to him. See, I can be very literal sometimes. And when I read passages like this, there's part of me that wants to push back and ask, like, how can we experience the kind of rest that Jesus was inviting them to since we aren't physically able to be with him? But see, we have to consider how God's presence is represented among humanity throughout the scriptures. See, we already talked about how the tree of life represented God's presence in the garden. And then because of the choices that they made, they were kicked out of the garden. Then for a long period of time, God's presence was not resting on earth. But then Jesus came as the new tree of life and represented God's presence. But see, Adam and Eve, they were in the garden with the tree and they still messed up. And the disciples, they were literally walking with Jesus and they still didn't always get it. So what hope do we have? But see, that's where the Spirit comes in. God sent his Spirit on the day of Pentecost. Now his presence is available to everyone who believes in Jesus. Everyone. When we accept Jesus' invitation to come to him, we enter into God's presence. God's presence enters into us, and the tree of life can begin to grow inside of us. And we can find rest for our souls. See, the author of Hebrews does this cool little recap of what Sabbath rest is really all about. This is in Hebrews 4, verse 1. He says, "Therefore, since the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us be careful that none of you be found to have fallen short of it. For we also have had the good news proclaimed to us just as they did, but the message they heard was of no value to them because they did not share the faith of those who obeyed. Now we who have believed enter that rest just as God has said. So I declare my oath in my anger and they shall never enter my rest. And yet his work have been finished since the creation of the world. For somewhere he has spoken about the seventh day in these words, on the seventh day God rested from all of his works. And again, in the passage above, he says, and they shall never enter my rest. Therefore, since it still remains for some to enter that rest, and since those who have formerly had the good news proclaimed to them and did not go because of their disobedience, God again set a certain day, calling it today. This he did when a long time later he spoke through David, as the passage already quoted, today if you hear his voice and do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest. See, what he's doing up to here is he's going through the whole biblical story. And he's saying, like, he's going through, like, yeah, God rested. He said, you can enter my rest and stuff. And all these things, but people still aren't resting. People aren't listening. They've heard the good news. They're still not listening. And they're still not listening. So the rest, it still is yet to be entered. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken later about it another day. See, the rest is not permanent. The rest has not been established. See, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their work, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest, so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience. For the word of God is alive and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and the attitudes of the heart. Nothing in all of creation is hidden from me, from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him who we must give account. See, the kind of rest that we can experience here and now, it's only a little taste of what's to come. See, what he's saying here is that there's a little bit of rest that we can experience. We can join in to a little bit of God's rest. But it's just a foreshadowing of God's permanent Sabbath-like rest that is still to come. Because we still have work to do. See, our mission as believers is not to... It's not to just go about and labor and go to church on Sundays and just say good things and have the right things and just listen to Christian music in the car. No, it's to share the good news of the gospel. It's to love God and to love others with everything inside of us. See, this work can be exhausting. But it's also rewarding. It's hard, but it's so worth it. You know, last week, Matt was, he read his favorite scripture to you, and I was thinking about this morning. And, you know, this work, it can be draining. That's why we have to make sure that we position ourselves near God's presence. We allow God's presence to constantly feed us. Jeremiah 17:8, it says, they will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when the heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought, and it never fails to bear fruit. Y'all, we may be physically and emotionally drained, but we can still be spiritually full. If we are resting in God's presence, like a tree planted by the waters, if we position ourselves in life in such a way that we are constantly being filled, we are constantly being spiritually filled and exposed to God's presence, then even though we may physically and emotionally be exhausted, our lives can still produce fruit. Paul encourages the church in 1 Corinthians 15:58. He says, therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you like a tree planted by water. Always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Nothing is wasted. Nothing that we do on this earth is wasted in the kingdom. But let me clarify something here. The work of the Lord is not limited to being employed at a church or a nonprofit ministry. See, I kind of grew up with the idea of being called to the ministry, it meant that you would become a pastor or a missionary or something like that. And I never wanted to be called to the ministry because I never wanted to be a pastor. However, I strongly believe with everything that I am that the greatest ministry opportunities happen in a normal, everyday life. See, we've all been gifted, we've all been empowered, and given the authority by Jesus to carry out our own unique missions within the body of Christ. Individually, we all have something to do. Collectively, we make it happen. See, your life is your mission field. And I am no more qualified than anyone else to do God's work. See, in Colossians 3, verse 23, Paul instructs, whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ that you are serving. Everything you do, do it for the Lord. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if you're serving on the line at Tyson. You can do it for God. You can chop up that chicken for God. But your life can be an inspiration to the people around you. If you're at school, the way that you treat your classmates, the way that you are obedient to your teacher or listen and are respectful to your professor, it shows the good fruit of the gospel. It is your mission. It is your call. It is your purpose. And when we individually do our part in the collective work of building the kingdom, we can begin to find rest for our souls. And it will and it should look different for everyone. But see, we have to shift our focus. We have to prioritize spiritual rest. See, instead of taking mental health days, maybe we need to rethink that. Maybe we need to take spiritual health days. You know, I have people tell me all the time, like, I'm sorry, I just can't make it to church on Sunday. It's just too much. It's just asking too much of me. My schedule is too full. I work Monday through Friday, and then I have to do everything on Saturday, and then coming, it's my only day every week to rest. People tell me that all the time. I can't come to church because I need to rest. And I get it. I really do. Like, it's hard for me to get up on Sunday mornings too. But coming together with your fellow believers to learn and worship, it should help you find the rest that you really need. See, we have to make room in our lives for God's presence, for God's peace to provide us with rest. We all have to figure out how to keep God's rest central in our lives. See, I'm a visual person, so I put reminders in my path to keep me on the right track. I have, if you come in my home, there's almost every picture or sign or something, it has an intentional reason why it's there. Like I have a sign above the door going out of the house that says, like, oh, whatever that scripture is. But it reminds me to go out and love people. Down our hallway, I have the fruits of the Spirit at the end of the hall. So as I walk down the hall numerous times every day, right in my face is the fruits of the Spirit, reminding me to be patient and kind and have self-control when I'm going to discipline kids. And so I like to put visual reminders in front of me. So I spend a lot of time at my desk. And so over my desk, over my computer, I have one of my friends make a sign for me that just says shalom. You guys know what shalom means? It's Hebrew for peace. But it's a flourishing, it's a peace in God's presence. It's more than just the absence of harm. It's true rest, restful peace. And it reminds me that God's peace is literally higher than my sticky note mess and my reminders and my to-do list and my planners and everything that's happening on my computer. God's peace is literally physically higher. And that's my reminder. I also have a sticky note on my computer that says, pray first. And there was one day I was just really struggling and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get everything done. And this just came to me. And so I wrote it down on there and I have an acronym to show you guys. I've made a graphic to show you guys so I wouldn't forget what it was. But PRAY is an acronym for praise, relax, align, and yield. And so when I sit down at my desk in the mornings, I see that note and I'm like, okay, I've got to do that first. I have to thank God for the breath in my lungs for this morning and the opportunity to sit here and do his good work. I need to relax in his presence. I need to align my heart with his, and I need to yield my desires, my to-do list to his purpose. See, we all have to consider what drains us. Like, what have we filled our lives with that causes so much stress and prevents us from rest? Is it your job? Is it your relationships? Is it your kids' sports schedule? Are these things draining you because you're trying to do it on your own? See, how can we shift our focus in these areas to see them as working for God? How can we see our job as being a mission field? How can we see our relationships as being fulfilling? How can we invest in those relationships to make them fulfilling? How can we think about all of the basketball games as maybe an opportunity to sit down on the bleachers next to somebody and have a conversation that brightens their day, even if it has nothing to do with God? How can we be a positive impact on our community? How can we glorify God in stressful situations? See, I can only speak for myself in this, but it's when I'm trying to control the outcome of situations when I feel the most stressed, when I'm trying to do it myself. See, a few years ago, someone challenged me to consider my to-do list of responsibilities. She told me, she was like, think about each thing that's on your to-do list and ask, who gave you that task? Was it you or is it from God? See, if something is started by me, if I decide to do something, then I have to do the work and strain and struggle to get it done. But if it's something that God gave for me to do, he's going to carry the weight of it. His yoke is easy because he's doing a lot of the work. I just have to keep doing my part. See, I want to challenge you guys today to surrender. To let go of the things that are in your life that are weighing you down. Empty yourself so God can fill you with his presence. A tree can't grow without water. Stay close to the water. A tree also can't grow into its full potential if it's crowded out. You got to make room for the tree of life to grow inside of you. What is it that allows you to feel the closest to God? Is it worship? Is it prayer? Is it reading? Is it going for a walk, fishing? Is it spending time with family and friends? Like, what is it in your life? How does God speak to you? How do you connect with God on a personal level? So I'm going to invite the band to come back up, and we're going to finish our worship service today. But while they come up, I want to ask you guys, has anybody been following what's going on at the Asbury University in Kentucky? If you don't know what's going on, there's this revival that's kind of sparked on this college campus in Kentucky. Kentucky, right? Yeah. And they are, it has become huge on social media. The word is spreading. There's pictures everywhere. You can't get on Facebook or Instagram without seeing something from it because people are pouring in to this place. And what people have noticed about it is they don't have lights. They don't have fancy lights. They don't have a smoke machine. They don't have a full band. They don't have comfortable seats. I'm sure with that many people, hopefully they have more than one bathroom. But it's not a production. It is people that are genuinely seeking and trying to connect with God. Why? People are traveling, taking off work, taking their kids out of school. People are traveling to this one location to try to connect with God. Why? There's no big name speaker. There's no, like, Hillsong's not there doing worship. So why? Why are people going there? I've been thinking about this a lot the past couple days, and I'm very skeptical. I'm a very skeptical person. So my first thought when I first started seeing things about it, I was like, it's a fad. And aren't you glad you have such a nice, hopeful person leading you? But I was like, it's a fad. But then something about it, I was like, no, this seems like people are really connecting with God here. Like people are really pouring in and there's something happening here. And I can't deny that because I know that God works in that way. But what is bugging me about it? It is. It's a movement. Or it should be. But what, I just keep thinking, like, what is bugging me about this so much? And this morning I was thinking about it, and I was like, it's because it's not a movement out. See, people are moving, but they're moving into one spot. Once again, the experience that people are craving, that what they want, what is drawing people into it is because people are wanting God's rest. They are wanting that refreshing, that feeling inside of them that makes them feel like they can go on about their days, and they are craving it and they are running to it. And that's a good thing. But what bugs me about it is that God's presence is not reduced to that one university campus. Never has been, never will be. God's presence is just as real right here in Clarksville, Arkansas, than it is in Kentucky. So what's the difference? See, people are pouring in there with expectation. They're going ready, prepared, hungry. You don't go to a restaurant unless you're hungry. They are starving for God's rest. And they're going and they're seeking it out and they're walking in with the expectation that God's going to do something in my life right here in this moment, in this location. What would happen across the world if every person walked in to every building, every situation, every relationship that they have in their life, every job, with the expectation that God is going to do something incredible in their lives and through them in that moment? God is not ever reduced to a building or a single location. His presence was represented by a tree. Then his presence was represented by a man that walked this earth, this pocket of God's presence and holiness on earth walking among us. But then Jesus was like, no, it's better that I go. I know you want to spend time with me, but it's better that I go, because if I go, then the Spirit can come. And if the Spirit comes, then my presence, God's presence, is accessible to every person on earth now. In the future, he's here. not about reviving God's Spirit. It's about reviving God's Spirit within us. So the reason I wanted to do worship at the end of service today is because I don't want to tell you guys, hey, ask yourself these questions. Consider how you can make room in your life for God and then send you home. No, I want to give you time right here to spend with Him. So you've already carved out Sunday morning time, and you know how we are. Sometimes it goes a little over. So you've carved out your time. Don't waste it. Use this time to stand and worship, sit and pray, walk around, pace, think, read, talk to someone, pray with someone. Take this time and just think about some of the answers to these questions I've been asking. What causes stress in your life? Is it something you started, or is it something that God gave you to do? What is it that you can do to help you feel more connected with God? And I want you to make the decision today to prioritize spending time in God's presence. Prioritize experiencing God's rest, because it's something that we all crave. We all need. That's how we were created to operate. Ask God to challenge you, because it might be tricky. It might be hard. It may be uncomfortable. You may not like it. But if God asks you to give up something so you can carve out more time with Him, maybe that's what you need to do. But right here, right now, in this moment, God's presence is here, and it's thick, and He's waiting for you to just breathe Him in. So we're going to do a few more songs, and just allow God to speak to you in this moment. Because I promise you, I'm not standing up here as an expert, and there's some things that God's challenging me on that I don't want to do. It doesn't get easier. But you know what? I know, because His work is good. Where He leads, I can find that nuach, that rest. I can rest secure and safe in His presence. So take this time and just let the words of these songs speak to you, and just listen for God's voice.